Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
What's good, Portland? This is Tevin.
And this is Jalen.
Next week on Combined Culture Radio, tune in for an exclusive listening experience.
We have Portland's native Kobe premiering his new album, Escalate, with me.
That's an exclusive opportunity to lean in on Kobe on CC Radio at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, November 28th, only on KBOO.
I'm on the right away. Don't have to find a way. Get out my way. I'm making better plays. You know I make better this morning, feeling like I needed
to. Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH, Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Coming up at 11:30 is Art Focus. Art Focus interviews Robert Hoffman of the American Institute of Architects about the 2018 AIA Portland Architecture Awards. And coming up right now at 11 is Stage and Studio. Stage and Studio talks to the artistic director of the August Wilson Red Door Project about their new production, Cop Out, Beyond Black, White, and Blue.
I'm Dime Roberts, Stage and Studio. We're listening to music by Portland musician and composer David Ornette Cherry. Hear his music at davidornettecherry.com. Today, we talk about an original, timely, and thought-provoking work. It's called Cop Out, Beyond Black, White, and Blue. It's the brainchild of Kevin Jones, artistic director of the August Wilson Red Door Project. They most recently toured and still tour the production of Hands Up, seven monologues about racial profiling of African Americans by police. With me in my office studio to tell us about their latest work is Kevin Jones himself. Welcome to my office studio and to Stage and Studio, Kevin. Thank you for coming here.
Thanks, D-May. It's great to be here. I like your office. It's very nice, very comfortable.
Well, it's great to have you here. We're having a good time. Well, you know, I am just so impressed with your work. Kevin, the Red Door Project has had such a successful preview of Cop Out last month. And I mean, you know, people were on waiting lists. They were really wanting to see this, and sold out. It was over full. What was the response from your perspective of your new work?
Well, it was great. I mean, you couldn't ask for more than that, just to know that people want to come out and see the show. But I think what was also really important and just really gave me a lot of pleasure was hearing how people responded to the show after the show, for the most part. I mean, we had a very broad, mixed reactions, but overall, I'm very happy with the response from the audience.
One of the audience members wrote to you or gave you a comment. This person had seen both Hands Up and Cop Out and said that Red Door's work got them in touch with a different way to be in the world, and one that's not about defining worth, about right or wrong, but about being human and sharing and thinking and feeling with others. Mm-hmm. What does that say to you?
Yeah. So much of our work has been focused on trying to step out of the binary conversation between the general public and the perspective of the police and the feelings and our vitriol that we are so quick to respond with. and try to understand that there's another conversation that is not just about right or wrong, but more about learning and evolving and growing and listening and learning how to listen and learning how to take the other person's side and understand that, you know, we're all the same, and seeing yourself in someone else, all of these things are really important in the work that we do at the Red Doors, that we don't vilify and we don't polarize with people.
Well, to give a little history about Hands Up, I was actually curious about how long the Red Door Project has been featuring Hands Up, Seven Playwrights, Seven Testaments around the Northwest.
Yes, we started that show in April of 2016, so it's been over 2 years. And it's interesting, we said we were only going to do six shows. We're going to tour it around the city in different venues throughout Portland, and then we're going to put it down. And our first show, we had 25 people, and our sixth show, we had over 250 people at Artist Repertory Theater. We had to turn people away. And at that last show was a funder, an executive from a foundation here in Portland. And he asked us if we wanted to continue to do the show. And we said, well, I don't know. He said, well, go away, think about it, bring me back a budget, and come talk to me. So we did. And he funded, I believe, 10 more shows that year. And from that, other supporters, other partners, other foundations came on board. And we wound up doing 60 shows, and over 12,000 people have seen the show.
That is so amazing. I mean, I don't know how many works get 12,000 people to see it that's not like at the Keller Auditorium or something like that.
I know. And, you know, the interesting thing is that we did not, it never was reviewed, so it was all word of mouth. We didn't advertise it in any of the mainstream marketing venues. We didn't, you know, we didn't buy a billboard, and we didn't advertise it in the newspaper. It was all word of mouth. And that was quite surprising as well, that people owned the show. And what I mean by owned is after they saw it, they felt like, this is a show that I want to give to my constituency, my family, my friends, my partners, and my coworkers. And that's what happened. And it was amazing.
Hands Up was so timely. The monologues were commissioned by the New Black Fest after the police shootings of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and John Crawford III in Beaver Creek, Ohio. And there was such a range of perspectives in Hands Up. In short, how would you like say what it ranged from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the main reasons we chose Hands Up, is because of the variety and the diversity it reflects of the Black community and the Black perspective. So we had an African-American playwright and performer who talks about his experience being followed by police cars and mistaken for a gang member and pulled out of the car on his way to performing his one-man show. We have a Black man who was adopted by two white parents who talked about his sense of or his lack of awareness about what it means to be truly a Black man, and talks about his lack of experience in being profiled in general. We have a college, he tours actually, he's a college speaker, he speaks on race and multiculturalism, and he talks from his perspective of showing up at universities, talking about what it means to be a race man, as he describes it, and knowing full well that these are organizations that are funded by white donors, and the complexity of that and the confusion and the contradictions that live there. It's very insightful. We have one who speaks to his unborn child. It's a letter to the child that will never be born because he doesn't feel that the world is ready to bring another Black child into, and also his retaliation with the police department. So they go all over the place. There's a woman who, in a relationship with a white boyfriend, is caught in a domestic dispute, and the police come to resolve the dispute, and they wind up taking her to jail and not him, and talking about her experience in the jail system and the ongoing psychological scar that she carries with her now. Yeah, they're all over the place. A biracial man who talks about the fact that he has no real identity as a Black person, but even with that, he can empathize with what it means to be marginalized and how he sees it, a very unique perspective on race and the race narrative. Very powerful and very informative for both the African-American community as well as other communities.
So moving, and hands up too. You know, it was a previously commissioned work, but Red Door added these post-show dialogues, which would you say were almost as important?
I would say they were for sure as important. As a matter of fact, we wanted to make sure that the show did not leave people with just a lot of feelings and reactions and free-floating ideas, but we wanted to make sure that they were able to connect with each other to articulate the new insights and thoughts and feelings of anger and hurt and sadness, so that we as a community, as an audience together, we can listen to each other and allow ourselves to be impacted by that instead of just going away in our own little private world and thinking our thoughts, but realizing that by listening and talking, that's where the real healing begins. So it was a big, big part of it, and we encourage people to stay out of their head. You know, we would say to them that if we all can accept that the problem still exists, so trying to articulate and pontificate about what we think needs to happen, if we can stay away from that and stay more focused on what we feel, what's in our heart, where our voice is, that we'll get a lot more insight and perhaps even more wisdom. So we stayed there as much as we could.
We're going to talk about Cop Out pretty soon, but are you going to continue doing Hands Up?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We're starting to get a lot of interest from the public sector and from the criminal justice system. We've had the DA office and other criminal justice organizations reaching out to us, because what they're understanding in Hands Up is it's a perspective that they've never really gotten before, and it's being delivered to them in a way that they can stay neutral. They don't have to be in reaction to what they hear. They can take it and learn, hearing the experiences of people who are a lot like them, educated, smart, and are effective in the world. And so I'm really excited about the DA, because it means that they're actually learning how to advocate for the defendant, for the African-American man. That's exciting.
That's very exciting, especially here in Portland and in Oregon. I'm Dime Roberts talking with Kevin Jones, Artistic Director of August Wilson Red Door Project, and you're listening to Stage and Studio. The Red Door Project is opening their new show, Cop Out, on November 30th at 7:30 p.m., December 1st at 7:30 p.m., and December 2nd at 2 p.m. at Self Enhancement, Inc. That's located at 3920 North Kirby Avenue in Portland. You can find out more at copoutportland.com or at thereddoorproject.org. And also, I have those links at stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Last year, Kevin, if we can remember all the way back then, I moderated a City Club of Portland talk between you and Deputy Chief Robert Day, and you announced there, I don't know if you had announced it earlier, but at that particular recording, you started talking about the Cop Out Project. How much did the dialogues during Hands Up and the response by Robert Day and police in general who experienced the show have on this project, Cop Out?
Yeah, and we did announce that last year with you. That was pretty exciting. You know, we have, like I said, we did 60 shows of Hands Up, and that means over 60 times we've heard those monologues repeated, and we've heard people's reaction to those monologues. And, you know, it's very clear from the very beginning that they're one-sided. They're very much on the side of the general public or African Americans, and very much against the notion of policing in any way, shape, or form, to be honest. So we found ourselves, me and Leslie, my partner and co-founder, we found ourselves polarized, and we felt it was important to, because what we are about is making sure that both sides are connecting. It's not about one over the other, and we needed to get to that other side. So we wanted to talk to the police, not to equalize. This is not a question of equivalency, that the black experience is the same as the police experience, but just to be able to create a dialogue, and that we, because we came from one perspective, we knew we needed to reach out. So we connected with the police. The captain of the training division, Bob Day, came to see the show, and then we met with him. Bob was very resistant at the very beginning, but, you know, he's been on his own journey in his own life, you know, working on these issues, thinking about these issues. And so he was at a place where he was ready to stay open in spite of his beliefs and his defensiveness around, you know, the profession of being a police officer. He believes in it. He's an unapologetic cop, but he stayed open. And I told him that I wanted to hear his stories. I wanted to hear police stories. And Bob got very excited about that. And I could tell by just how excited he was that this was rare, that it isn't often that someone like myself, especially, who looks like me, who says to him, I want to hear your stories. And so we both jumped in with both feet, and we went on a journey of reaching out to police officers. First, we wanted to make sure the police officers got to see Hands Up, which was quite a process. We had to first let them, we were invited into their place of business. They took us on a training day all day from 6 in the morning to 6 at night, teaching us about what it means to be a police officer and going through different scenarios and having hard, heavy discussions. And then finally being willing to see Hands Up. And from that, we started a dialogue, hard dialogue. Hopelessness was a big part of what we had to fight through, the hopelessness of either side being able to have impact on the other side. But we stayed in the conversation, and what Bob came back and said was, I've never seen this happen before. It's not perfect, but these cops are listening, and they're saying things about how they feel in a way that in 30 years I've never heard. That was an encouragement for us. That was the voice of encouragement that basically said, keep doing this. And so we hired playwrights from all over the country. We looked for playwrights who felt like they had a soft spot for this work, who had something to work out for themselves or something that drew them in. And I was surprised at how many playwrights showed up, how many really, really good playwrights showed up saying, I want to be a part of this. And they met with cops, and we recorded their stories. And right now I have about 21 monologues from all over the country of police officers. And it's we workshopped them. We brought the playwrights in, and we sat in a hotel and wrote them and rewrote and edited and changed and performed and directed. And that's where we are right now. We have the monologues, and we're at the place now where we've presented the show at the Winningstad downtown, and we had 3 shows there. It was incredibly received. We sold out all 3 performances, got some great feedback, and then we did 2 shows at the Hollywood Theater. And again, it was well received. And each time we do the show, I will add a monologue or take out a monologue. We add some changes and make changes throughout. And this next coming show is the opening, so hopefully it's the culmination of all of what we've learned in this process. And we're going to keep doing it. I mean, this is the opening, but this is not to say that we won't keep changing the show as we go along.
Well, this is such an incredible process, too, and you said you had 21 monologues, but 21. Obviously you're not doing 21 monologues.
No,
but
we're doing 8 monologues, but, you know, they're the kinds of monologues that we've been reaching for are stories of their humanity. You know, we're not interested in what does it mean to be a cop and, you know, different crime stories that we see on TV all the time, but what's going on for them personally? What do they think about? What is unresolved in their own world? Where are their priorities? What scares them? Those kinds of things, which we as human beings can all relate to.
So was Deputy Chief Robert Day involved in this process as well? And, you know, the cops that were interviewed, how did they respond to, especially, you know, having people actually care to talk with them, you know, and about their difficulties in doing their job.
Yeah. Well, yes, Bob has contributed in many ways as far as the collecting of stories. We have his story, and he also, you know, sort of, I mean, cops are very distrusting, first off, so they're not going to talk to anyone unless they get an okay, you know, from someone who they trust. And Bob has graciously given us that trust in a way that is continues to blow us away, and I value it and treasure it so much, and I don't want to do anything ever to jeopardize or take advantage of that trust. But each police officer, the reason why police officers, I think, are so distrusting is because they're such giving human beings, and I feel like that's so cliche to say that. I don't want to say that, but it's really true. Cops are very, very generous with themselves, and I think you have to have that going on for yourself. And so when it came time to asking them questions or asking them for stories about their own experience, once they trusted you, you couldn't stop them from talking. And on a deep way, and about things that are not just intimate, but incredibly private and personal. And I feel like, you know, we thought about, like, we got to be careful about how we tell these stories, because we don't want, you know, we don't want to say too much. But each time the cop would say, as long as you don't give my name, please tell that story. I want that story to be told. So, yeah, they were so generous with themselves and their stories.
Well, it sounds like it's been an incredible process, incredible experience, and certainly it's a much-needed work. But in the development and rehearsal process, you know, you said some of the challenges were the sense of hopelessness, and you worked with such great writers and actors and co-directors, Damaris Webb and Phil Johnson. I'm going to ask you a tough question, but though, was there resistance to the idea of this project from, you know, the talent, the incredible talent involved, and also from audience members who might have a difficult time seeing, because of all the racial profiling there has been and so many of the killings? Was there resistance to this very idea that you would present Cop Out as, you know, in that perspective?
Wow, Dime, that's a big, huge, great question. In answer to, did it create any tumult or...
I don't know if there was, like, tumultuousness, but honestly, you know, sometimes people have an instant reaction, let's say.
Yeah, and I would say yes. I mean, actors of color, you know, often they would pull me over to the side and say, Kevin, why are you doing this? I mean, what's going on, man? What are you up to? Or trying to school me, you know, you can't equalize this, man. This is a false equivalency if you're trying to balance the tables. So I would get schooled. There was a level of distrust. I was accused of suffering from Stockholm syndrome. You know, captured, my captives have, you know, brainwashed me.
Seriously, somebody said that to
yes,
you?
Yes, someone said that to me, that I was must be suffering from Stockholm syndrome, that, you know, I've been captured by the enemy. And, you know, I understand all that, but... Yes, so actors had to deal with trusting me and understanding why we're doing this. I never asked anyone to go beyond their own values or belief systems, like, you know, stay true to yourself. But the opportunity in engaging in this work, I would tell folks, is that you get to learn how to step into someone else's shoes that is maybe really difficult for you. And you as an actor, you do that all the time. But I have to say, so many of these actors had so much trouble thinking and feeling and allowing themselves to love a cop, because, you know, as an actor, you can't just play someone else if you can't do it if you don't love that person. So you got to find a place in yourself to love police officers, and you can tell when they don't. So that was a hard pill to swallow for a lot of performers, a lot of, and the writers. We had writers who, you know, we had one writer, I won't say who said, okay, I will do this as long as I can do it on the phone, but I do not want to sit in the same room with a police officer. And we said that probably is not going to work. So thank you, but no thank you. But I understand. This is you know, archetypal, deep in the psyche of this country, of this world, right? But especially this country, especially when you're asking African Americans to deal in this conversation, it's painful for some of them. So yeah, it was hard. And you know, but I have to say that for those people, the writers, the actors, the designers, and audience members who stayed with us, it's so uplifting and encouraging to hear people say, other than thank you for doing this, but also how much I've grown, how much I've changed, how much I've learned. So
you present cops as people, and that's the goal, and you say that you've succeeded.
I think so. You know, we've been told that we need to have more white people, white cops on stage. We have several black cops. We have many white monologues. It's interesting how some audience members tend to racialize the show in that way. I definitely think we've taken white monologues and given them to black actors and vice versa. So, yes, I think when you see the show, you're going to see human beings. You're going to be surprised at your reaction. You're going to be moved. And you're going to be some happy, some angry. Some of you will not like it, but come anyway.
That gives you a lot to talk about afterwards. Ah. And you have that model, right? You're still doing the post-show discussion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Demi Mae. That's really true. We have the talk back, and it's really powerful to hear what people have to say and what they have learned or not learned. We had one young man who said, you know, I feel manipulated, and this doesn't change anything about how I feel about police officers. There's still institutional racism within the police department, and nothing is going to change in my mind until that is fixed. And I said, thank you. You're absolutely right. And I just want to say that the reason that Cop Out exists is because the police opened the door and let us in. We didn't insist on coming in. They said, please come in and get to know us. And so what are we going to do? We are not going to turn around and walk away and say, okay, no, we don't want to hear your story because we're mad at you. No, we're artists. We're going to go in and we're going to listen, and we're going to try to learn and hopefully share that with the rest of, or share that with anyone who wants to hear it, actually. So yeah, I just wanted to say that.
Well, and the whole mission of the August Wilson Red Door Project is to have an impact on the racial ecology of Portland and Oregon.
Yes.
And so this is one of the ways of doing that. And honestly, Kevin Jones, you're a personal inspiration for me and so many people in this community. But I want to personally thank you for inspiring me through my nonprofit work, Media Rights, and our Theater Diaspora program, because I've told you this before, but your Hands Up project and the model that, you know, you created with the post-show discussions really inspired me to create the ISM project to address all the isms that have been on the rise since the 2016 presidential election. And thank you, you know, because this is important work. You're a nationally recognized actor, director, and this is like the core of the meaningful work that you do. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dime. I'm honored. I'm honored to have been able to establish a relationship with you. And yeah, I'm really touched by what you said, and especially coming from you and the work that you've done over many years. So thanks a lot.
Well, this is something. Oh, you're shy. Well, you're really important to this community. And the August Wilson Red Door Project presents the opening, the official opening of Cop Out, Beyond Black, White, and Blue. Very important work, directed by Kevin Jones, co-directed by Damaris Webb and Phil Johnson. The shows are November 30th at 7:30 p.m., December 1st, 7:30 p.m., and December 2nd at 2 p.m. at Self Enhancement, Inc. That's located at 3920 North Kirby Avenue in Portland. I say that you should
get your tickets right away, because I know this work, and it gets sold out really quickly. Red Door Project believes art should be accessible to all, so tickets are pay what you can, and there's a suggested donation, but you never turn anyone for lack of funds, and I respect that too. For tickets and info, visit copoutpdx.org and reddoorproject.org. Kevin Jones, thank you so much for joining me here in Break Legs this weekend.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
That's it for Stage and Studio. We'll have the show online at stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio, as well as iTunes. Check out our page at facebook.com/stageandstudio and tweet me at stage, the letter, and studio. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts. We're going out with more music by David Ornette Cherry at davidornettecherry.com.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society's concert season. On Friday, November 30th, the PFS concert features Patrick Ball and the Legends of the Celtic Harp in their program titled A Winter Gift. These three famed harpers perform Celtic legends and weave English and Irish literature with rare pieces of holiday music. The concert and storytelling event is at the Reedwood Friends Church, 2901 Southeast Steele in Portland, at 7:30 p.m. On January 18th next year, the Northwest band True North will bring their folk and bluegrass stylings to the PFS stage. For more information, go to the website kboo.fm and look on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
My name's Joseph Galliman. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Robert Hoffman. He's the Executive VP of the American Institute of Architects of Portland. And he's here to talk about 50 years after Whitney Young Jr., a show on now at the AIA Portland, and also to talk about the recent Architecture Awards. Thanks for coming back to KBOO, Robert.
Oh, Joseph, thanks for having me. I love talking with you.
Tell us about Whitney M. Young. At the recent Architecture Awards, there was everyone was reminded that something big happened here in Portland 50 years ago. What was it?
That's right. Hopefully a lot of folks are familiar with who Whitney M. Young was. He was a civil rights leader who was